What's up, everyone? I'm Zach, your host of the Auxoro podcast, The Voice of Music. And this week, we sat down with Jess Glynn. Now, the first time I heard Jess Glynn, I was lying on the beach when Rather Be started playing, and Jess's voice stood above everything else. The chatter, the background noise. I was absolutely mesmerized by her voice on the track with Clean Bandit. At the time, back in 2014, I didn't know what she looked like, but her sound stuck with me. Since then, Jess has earned numerous accolades, including 8 number one singles, 2 number one albums, and a Grammy. Her most recent album, Always In Between, just dropped last month and has already claimed the top spot in the UK charts. On this week's episode, Jess talks the creative process behind Always In Between, her relationship with social media, getting comfortable as a live performer, and so much more. It was an honor to be able to pick someone's brain who has reached such heights in the industry and has made so many songs close to me. Without further ado, here's our conversation with Jess Glynn. Help keep us centered. Actually, put the Arsenal and the Blue Chakra logo on the top of the podcast. I saw you posted the other day about the Blue Chakra and that influence. I didn't until I researched it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
The chakras, right? The 7 chakras in the body.
It is, yeah.
I saw you actually posted, you said that when there's a right balance of the throat chakra, we can express our feelings efficiently through communication using a pleasant voice, and it improves the artistic and spiritual abilities in our body.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I'm
maybe
feeling...
Maybe by me kind of putting out all this blue and my album helped Arsenal achieve their creative abilities.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty communicative right now as I'm shifting the laptop. So I like to start out our interviews with a quote, and I actually saw a quote that you said about Amy Winehouse.
Right.
And you had said that she's honest, she's different, and she's relatable in the sense that where she was from and how she did it, that's why you connect with her and why you felt that connection on the level of her artistry. And you also speak similarly in that way with Lauryn Hill. And I know those are two influences from your younger days. And obviously, I'm sure you still listen to them. They're powerhouse voices like yourself. I wanted to know how the evolution of those artists have affected your own artistry. Because when you're younger, you don't always listen to them appreciating like the actual artistry. It's more just fun. And then when you get older, it kind of takes on like a more therapeutic vibe. Like you start to learn more about the artists.
I guess like when I was young, I would listen and I was so inspired by their voices mainly. And I guess when I grew up and started to listen to the lyrics is when I started to understand that, you know, there's a lot more depth to what they're saying, you know, than what I thought originally. And I guess they inspired me massively vocally, you know, in how to kind of use my voice, but also in what I wanted to say. And like, I guess both of them had a platform which they used very well in that they had a message that they told through their music, and it kind of inspired me to want to achieve that and to write about things that were important to me, experiences that I've been through, you know, and not just write about anything that's not like irrelevant. Mm-hmm. I think it's important listening to music, because music you can connect on so many different levels, and it's so, you know, vast. It's like the whole world listens to music, you know, on a daily basis. And so, you know, to be able to speak to people through that, I think, is really important. And I think they both did massively for me.
Do you think music has almost taken on more of a therapeutic vibe as you've developed as an artist and as you've gotten older, more than just the listening in the younger phases, especially with artists like Lauryn Hill?
I think at times, I don't think I'd say all the time. I think I do think music for me, when I'm writing and creating, it's definitely a therapy. It's a space that I allow myself to relieve of emotions and feelings and things that I wouldn't necessarily say to people, that I just feel like I need to let it out in a certain way. And, you know, the microphone and the paper allow me to do that. you know, I just think music is a release in any form. Like, if you want to go out and have fun, you put on a tune.
Yeah.
If you want to chill at home and you just want to relax and you just want to have a moment yourself, you can put on some music. If you want to have a bath, if you want, do you know what I mean? It's like, it's the
bubble
answer
bath.
To a lot.
You gotta buy it.
It's like the answer to a lot of things, and I think that's, you know, the amazing thing about music.
Yeah, you can definitely wear many different hats as a music listener mm-hmm. and an artist, like the chill vibe, escapism, the therapeutic vibe, depending on what you're going for. So I saw your mom worked in the music industry, and
yeah.
her last job that she had before she left was actually at Atlantic Records in London. Yeah.
Weird, right?
Yeah, it's like full circle.
She gave that up though, because she was like, right, I'm just going to look after my kids because this is all too much.
Yeah, rightly
the
so.
Music industry,
and
then,
she was going through it in the 70s and 80s, which is a great time for music, but it's not necessarily the best to want to start a family. Like, if you're in that environment,
yeah,
I guess, like,
yeah.
it's tough to keep the separation.
It's possible,
yeah, for sure.
I think she just, you know, had been working in it for a long time. And I think my mom was really fortunate to work in the music when it was the best.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The industry was a totally different place. And I wish I was in the industry at that point in time.
Yeah.
But the stories my mom tells me is just, yeah, sounds like a very different place.
Yeah, maybe you'll bring it back. We'll see.
I don't think it'll ever go back there.
Yeah.
It's a shame. But the music industry is great as it is, and mm-hmm. everything evolves, you know, and it's like, going back, what's the point? You've got to go forward in life.
Yeah. Well said. So your mom and dad had a very eclectic taste in music.
Mm.
They went to jazz clubs, had vinyls around the house, and it seems like they really appreciated music. They weren't just listening to music, they appreciated it.
Massively.
And it seems like that kind of rubbed off on you, obviously, and having that dynamic of growing up in that environment. How do you think that affected you early on, of allowing that creative freedom and not being necessarily pushed towards music, but having that introduced to you growing up and seeing that world?
I think it was really great. Like, my parents always have music on around the house, and that's something that, you know, obviously you're there, so you're going to listen and pay attention. And then, you know, my dad would be like, oh, this guy, right? He's this and he's done this. And they kind of tell you about it. But my parents were never like forceful in music. They never were like, mm-hmm. be a singer. So I think, you know, it allowed me to just kind of love music. And I was always like really inspired by what my parents used to play. Like, I'd think I'd was really cool if I knew who an artist was that someone else didn't know.
Yeah.
So I'd do my research and I'd listen to those albums and I would, you know, do my homework. I think my parents wanted me to listen to a lot of different things, and just in life in general, I guess they were always very open in everything that I did. And, you know, if I felt like I wanted to do gymnastics, I would go and do, they would like, you know, support that. Or I wanted to go and do drama, they'd support that. Or
so they encouraged you creatively.
Yeah,
they didn't necessarily try to push you towards any one direction.
Exactly. Like, if they could afford it, then, and they could make it happen in some form, like in some way, they would do it. And so I guess with music, it was just an amazing thing that they were able to kind of teach me so much about so many different genres and so many different artists from a young age that, you know, it allowed me to love music on a different kind mm-hmm. of level.
So you got into the music industry as well, and you worked as an assistant for managers later on. And you were seeing promo, touring, A&R, things from the other side of the glass that not a lot of artists get to see from that perspective. What do you think are the most important takeaways from that time working on the other side, where you kind of saw what it was like to manage talent and you saw what went into that, as you always had those ambitions within yourself to eventually break through that wall and be an artist yourself?
I guess it was like it was wicked experience. I got to like see everything from the other side. I got to like experience touring. I got to experience promo. I got to experience press and media and contracts and, you know, all the work that goes into, you know, becoming a successful artist. And, you know, you really need to commit, and it's not something that you can really fuck about with, you know, because there was an artist that I worked alongside that genuinely wanted fame, and it wasn't about, you know, the music, and mm-hmm. he just loved the girls and loved the kind of idea of, you know, being in the spotlight and being this big gangster, but he wasn't, because he didn't work his ass off, and I had to call him at 7 o'clock in the morning to make sure he made an interview at 11 o'clock, you know? And for me, it was just, it was like a wake up call that, you know, if you want to do this job and you want to be a part of this industry, then you need to work your ass off, because nothing gets handed on a plate and people see through things, you know, very, very easily. You know, if you're not committed and you're not ready, you ain't going to like survive. And that's just a fact, you know, it's like looking through a piece of glass. Like, it's obvious.
Yeah. And that perspective is rare, I think, especially from the artist side, but also from someone like me, who's just an average listener, not on the artist side, doesn't work in management, but, to see the different levels of ingenuity, like you were saying, to see someone who maybe doesn't care about it for the right reasons, and then you see them working side by side.
Just think, like, when people want it easy, it's never gonna, you know, I just don't think they'll ever be able to succeed, because it's like, nothing's easy, and unless you like make sacrifices and really like put your all into something, I just don't believe it could happen. And you know, it was an amazing journey to be on, and it was great for me because I just learned so much about the industry and just about all the different, you know, crevices that you wouldn't necessarily coming into it having not done that. You know, reading through a contract, I would never have understood what was right and wrong and what kind of things you need as an artist. But somebody sat me down and said, read this contract and, you know, look at what, you know, the things that you might think sound wrong or out of order, or look at the things that, you know, might benefit you. Well, like obviously it wasn't for me, it was for someone else, but being able to do that and, you know, be a part of that kind of movement was amazing.
So I saw one piece of advice that you got before you left the music business on the management end was, you were thinking about becoming an artist at the time and making music, and someone told you to just write 100 songs, which, like,
so
if
there
someone
was one guy I got on with and one guy that I didn't get on with at the management. And the one guy I didn't get on with, I worked quite closely with, unfortunately. And the other guy that I got on really well with, I worked very closely with him, but in a different way. And he was like a leader. And you know, he introduced me to amazing, like, he like introduced me to Sade, for example. I never knew about Sade.
Yeah.
And boy, he was different, but he inspired me. Like, he was a go-getter and he just had a very calm presence. And you know, nothing was a given with him, and you know, he wouldn't ever give anything. He would advise and he would, you know, have a conversation and tell you things, but he'd never say, yeah, here's this, go and do that. He'd want you to work it out for yourself, and he would like make sure that you did, you know. He'd sit on the sideline and he'd make you feel like a fool if you didn't know how to do it by the end of the day or by the end of that week. And I love that, because I guess it taught me that, you know, I needed to be independent. And when he sat me down, when I did leave, I came back in for a meeting with him. And I said, look, I've got these songs. I had like 3 songs, thinking I was like, you know, well on my way.
Yeah.
And he was like, listen, they're great. You can sing. Go and write 100 songs. Trust me. You need to find yourself as an artist. You need to like do you and find you. And that's the only way it's going to work. And I was like, you're joking. But I went away and I got in the studio. I forced myself to network and found, you know, all these different lanes that, you know, allowed me outlets. And I met loads of producers and loads of different people anyway on my way. And I wrote a lot of songs, probably like near enough 200 songs, to be honest with you. And eventually I did find my sound. I found my thing. And it was like every kind of, there was loads of different hurdles, I guess. And it was like, I tried one genre and I felt like, oh, I've got something at the end of this. And then I tried something else and I was like, oh, okay, it's another stepping stone. And I tried something else. And I constantly, you know, would, yeah, just kind of mix it up and just try different things, that if something wasn't working, then I would scratch that and start again. And I just remember the day when I got into the studio with a girl, Jinjin, who I met on this course that I was doing. We went in the studio and we wrote this song called Home. It was on my first album. Mm-hmm. And I just remember that day, and I wrote that song and I was like, okay, I know what I'm doing. I've got it. It's taken me 2 years, however long it was, but I found it. And I was like, I knew in that moment I created something that was different and it was me and it didn't sound like someone else.
That's not your average piece of advice, though. I feel like it's very concrete. Most people would probably be expecting to hear something back along the lines of like, you know, just like, go follow your heart, like do what feels right. But if someone tells you like go write 100 songs and then come back to me, like if I was, you know, trying to get good at interviewing people, for example, and I asked someone that I looked up to and I said, what can I do to get better? And they were just like, go interview 100 people and come back to me. I'd be like, fuck. Like, all right, let's cross off a one. Yeah, we're probably at like 67 right now, something around there. So that's why I'm still working my way towards 100. So I'm getting the awkwardness out of it. Yeah, I'm like getting moving, like experimenting, like learning along the way in real time, which is cool. But that's
difficult when someone doesn't give you like a full, like he was like, go and write 100 songs. Trust me, you need to do your thing. And not that much else. I guess I had to figure it out on my way. But I think that's what, you know, if you really want something and you know, and in order to make it work, it needs to be something, you know, pretty spectacular in this industry. Mm-hmm. You really need to like wow people. People need to hear you and be like, I've not heard that before. Who is that person? That's what they want. Do you know what I mean? Like,
because I feel like people can be on autopilot and then they hear something and they're just like,
as long as they hear something
shit,
that's different.
Like,
yeah, and I guess for a long time, it took me a minute to find something that was different, that was really stand out. And I think, you know, the minute you find that, it like, you just know. And I guess when I wrote that tune, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I've made a moment in time.
This is it. But yeah, and it almost takes the motivation out of it, because if you're going to write 100 songs, you have to, at the end of the day, sit down and do it, regardless if you're feeling good that day or you're feeling uninspired that day or you're sick. You just, like, you can't rely on motivation. Yeah. You kind of have to rely on the dedication aspect of it and just getting it done and then looking back and seeing where you were from step one and then all the way forward, 100 songs later, 1,000 songs later, 1,000 interviews later, whatever, if I'm still alive. But yeah, no, that's great advice. And so for your live performance, you speak a little bit about not having a huge amount of experience performing live before you had gone on tour. Like, you weren't doing open mics when you were younger. Like, you weren't constantly like in that groove of getting comfortable performing live. Did you also take that approach with your live performance, kind of like just doing a bunch of shows, like learning on the fly, adapting, experimenting, finding yourself as a performer, like you were finding yourself as an artist?
Yeah, I think, I was never like the live kind of, I always felt like I needed to like hone in on the music before I could actually step out into the world and perform. I felt like it's easy to stand on a stage and just sing a cover, like, but for me, I never really connected with singing other people's songs. It didn't feel right. I felt like if I'm ever going to stand on stage and do lots of gigs, I need to be singing my own material. And I always felt like that from a young age, from the moment I decided, you know, that I love singing. And I guess my approach was different. It was weird because obviously, like, the way everything kicked off with me musically, once I signed my deal and, you know, and went into it all, Rather Be took off quite quick. And I was kind of chasing my tail a little bit, which was quite exciting. I was immediately thrown into the deep end when it came to live, because, you know, booking agents were, you know, wanting me to do shows and festivals and stuff. And obviously I had to really kind of focus on how I wanted to do that and how I was going to feel out my most comfortable. But I always knew what I wanted for a live setup. I always knew that I wanted a band. I wanted BVs. I wanted like people around me that have got my back, that make me feel like I'm at home on stage, like a family. And so when I auditioned for a band, you know, that's kind of what I was looking for. I was like making sure that I had people that I got on with as best mates, but also could work with.
Yeah.
And it worked out really well. And, you know, it took me a while to really feel comfortable on stage, because I think it's quite a lonely space if you're not comfortable. You know, standing at the front of a stage with 1,000 people staring at you, it's quite intimidating.
Yeah. And there's like 7 people staring at me right now and I'm still pretty intimidated.
Yeah, exactly. It's intimidating when you're doing that. And it took me a little minute to really get like comfortable with that and find a way that I could do it without, you know, feeling like I want to run off stage. Because there's been a lot of times when I have wanted to, and it's just, you know.
Run off stage to the sides, not like stage dive into the front.
No, not stage dive.
Not stage dive.
I just like, yeah. And so, but you know, now I feel so at one with being on stage and I feel a lot more comfortable. And that was just about finding people that helped me, you know, progress and, you know, taught me how to like feel comfortable in my skin on stage. And that's like really, really like important thing, I guess. You know, and that's obviously graft as well. A lot of studying for me about artists that I look up to, you know, like Beyonce for me is somebody that I've always looked up to as a performer. And she's always been somebody without knowing. I guess it's kind of guided me through performing and taught me that, you know, sometimes when you're on stage, you're not you. You're like, and not your alter ego, like she's her Sasha Fierce, whatever I am.
Yeah.
And I think that massively helped, you know, because you do have to kind of be someone that you're not in your everyday, you know, because you're performing and you're connecting with people that you don't know and on a big scale. And it's important to kind of be in that moment. And I guess that's what I love about performing is that you get to be yourself, but an accentuated version.
Yeah. Are there any specific techniques that you're able to take like people that you've studied, like Beyonce or other performers, where you see something and you say to yourself, oh, like maybe I should try doing this or experiment with that? Anything specifically that stands out?
I think it's just like about standing, like Beyonce's taught me to be fierce, like to be strong.
Like the vibe from Beyonce?
From her, like she stands on a stage and she has a presence. And I think it's so amazing when you see somebody walk on stage and it feels like the whole room needs to just be quiet. I think that's a really like unique thing to have. And she has that, you know, but that's how she carries herself. It's a confidence and it's a like self-surety. But, you know, she probably does have insecurities and probably does have things that, you know, that make her feel a certain way on stage. And I'm sure she gets nervous.
Yeah.
But it's just, I guess, how you deal with it and how you present it.
The one thing I always think about when I think of Beyonce performing live is there was one time where the guy controlling the fan was not hitting her hair at the right angle. Like he was
her hair got
messing
caught
it
in
up.
It.
Yeah. Or her hair got caught in it. And then later on, he just wasn't doing it the right way. So she stopped and like turned the fan herself and then went back to performing. And I was like, damn, like that's badass.
Yeah,
like,
she is badass.
Yeah.
She just knows.
So how are you able to channel the emotion that's relevant for each song that you're playing like it's the first time? Because so many people are there to see you, a lot of them for the first time, but you've sung that song hundreds, thousands of times before. But you have to make other people believe like it's the first time, and you have to get into that essence of the song, the emotion, and like relive a lot of the memories. And I imagine that's very
draining. I think whenever you sing a song on stage, it's always different because you're in a different space. There's a different environment. It's a different feeling. And I think, you know, depends on what's going on in your life at that moment in time. Like, do you know what I mean? If you've got something going on and a song's really relative at that moment, sometimes it affects you more. It depends whether you're like in a really good space and it's like making you feel, do you know what I mean? It's like, it just depends. And when you've sung a song a lot, like for example, when I started performing and doing shows this year, I was so excited to bring something new into the set. Like I remember we were doing some shows and the way that I had my setup and the way that things were, I was actually, it wasn't that I was bored. It wasn't that I was, I didn't enjoy it. It was just that I needed to change it up. In order to, I guess I wasn't enjoying it, actually. That's the truth. Yeah, I wasn't enjoying it as much as I was 2 years ago, for example. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, right, okay, I need to change up the band. I need to change up a few things. The setup of the way we're kind of performing the songs. And, you know, this album is a whole different scope. It's like the way this record sounds in comparison to the last one is very different. And the journey is very different. And I think that's important to, you know, put into the live shows. And so, you know, in preparation for the tour, we've kind of stripped it all back and we have gone a different way and we've, you know, taken a few things out, and it's now at a place where I'm really enjoying it. And, you know, performing new songs is always going to be so exciting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm starting to really love the songs that I did on the last record again, and performing them in a different way is, you know, it's really inspiring. Like taking them back to what they were at the beginning is really refreshing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just kind of, you've just got to like go with with how it's making you feel in a moment. And if something doesn't feel right, then you just got to change it up. And that's how I am. And
that's very self-aware to be able to say that something isn't right, or even that you are unhappy with it, or you don't like something, and be able to switch it up on the fly and know what that is.
I think, like, in everything I do, like creatively, musically, I'm very, I'm a bit of a control freak, and, you know, I like things to be a certain way. So if I ever feel like something needs to be a certain way, I'll always talk about it. I always push for it, because, you know, I've worked my ass off to be where I am, and I appreciate everyone's opinion, and, you know, I sometimes suggest things, and my musical director's incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, he understands me, you know, we've been working together for like 4 years, and, you know, that's a long time to get to know each other. And so he knows, he understands what it is that I want, and it's great. We have an amazing working relationship, and I do with all my team. And I think when something doesn't feel right, everyone kind of knows.
Yeah.
I think it's something that's pretty obvious. But yeah, it's been like an amazing journey so far, you know, leading up to this record and, you know, about to go on the road again, because it's a whole new experience.
What do you think the most important things that you learned from tour the last time around that you're going to take with you for always in between for this upcoming tour? Things that
I think just enjoy every moment and just, you know, and don't like put too much pressure on yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, it is important to walk on stage and have a presence and feel strong and feel empowered and, you know, those things. And if, you know, I think I've learned that, you know, vulnerability is a powerful thing, you know, and that's something that I think this album definitely captures massively. And you are vulnerable when you're on stage. And I think that's something that sometimes quite beautiful to see, you know, when you see an artist in a moment. And I think before, I think I would judge myself or worry, or, you know, I don't know what I'm going to be like when it actually happens, because it's an arena tour and obviously it's quite daunting. But, you know, those are things that I like to think that I will have progressed and I'll feel a lot more kind of empowered and a lot more secure in myself when I stand on those stages.
I think a very overlooked aspect of tour, at least from my perspective, is the ability of artists to stay healthy. You went on a 2.5 year tour before this. You're about to go on another long tour. Yeah. How are you able to not only keep yourself physically healthy, but also your voice, maintaining your voice, keeping your voice intact, vocal warm-ups, things like that?
You just got to make sure that you prioritize yourself. Like, I always, you know, there was a time, obviously, a couple of years ago when I had to have an operation because I didn't prioritize myself. I just constantly said yes to everyone else to please, you know, the people around me. But, you know, I've learned a lot, you know, through going through that. And you just have to make sure that if you need
to, like, saying no to people.
Yeah, saying no is one of the most important things. And, you know, I've just learned that I need to make sure that I drink a lot of water. I need to make sure that I get good rest. I need to make sure that I eat good food. And I also need to make sure that I have fun and I enjoy my life, you know, because that's all a part of keeping healthy. And, you know, you can't be that strict on yourself whereby you're not doing anything that's like giving you joy, mm-hmm. Just so that you can keep healthy. I think it's important to allow moments. But yeah, you know, I have to drink a lot of water. I don't drink a lot of alcohol, really. I have my moments and, you
Me
know,
too.
I eat good food and I just make sure that I rest. And I think that's one of the key things in this business is that you just got to put yourself first. And, you know, as long as you're healthy and you're happy, that's all that matters, really.
So for always in between the writing process, I saw you had a house in Sussex.
Yeah.
And the label, you rented it out for a week. It was a very organic process. You had a pool table, a bowling alley, you had friends there, you had some people that you didn't know that you wanted to work with and maybe explore some options that weren't there before. How do you think that week and working in that environment helped you find that through line of the album and the structure of the album?
I feel like I attempted a few things with this record, and I think I started it in 2016. And I think the first 2 weeks where I went into the studio after not being in for a while was very exciting and very refreshing, and it was a lot of fun. But I think I don't think I had a clear vision of where it was that I was going, but I was just experimenting. And then I went back in again at the beginning of 2017, where I came to LA, and I was there for 2 months and I wrote a lot. I was with amazing writers, producers. It was an incredible experience. But again, I think it was a very intense period of time and a lot of different sessions, and I wasn't really able to keep a structure. But I learned a lot about where I wanted to go with the record. And I feel like when I came back, I think both me and the label felt like I had some amazing material, but it didn't feel like it was connecting.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I took a break, and then it wasn't until the end of 2017 that I was like, right, let's get out. This is what I want to do. I'm ready to get back in, but I want to do it my way. And the label was so excited. They were like, finally, she wants to work again. We want to get this record finished. So we got down all the people that I love, that I work so well with, and I did on the last record. Everybody came down. A few extra names that also came down to the house in Sussex, which was really exciting. So it wasn't that many of us. I want to say about 10 people max for the week, like in and out. And the environment that you explained was just the most, it was perfect. And I think, you know, I'd been through a few different things over those years that I really wanted to talk about. And I think I kept trying, but wasn't necessarily in the most comfortable space. And I think by doing what we did in that house allowed me to feel comfortable and at one with the people that I was around. It allowed me to like spend time with people and let them into my life a little bit and what I've been through. And also just to like feel that I wasn't being judged, or, you know, there was no pressure of a record label or a studio or a presence. You know, if we wanted to write, we could write in the morning. If we wanted to write in the afternoon, we'd write in the afternoon. If we wanted to stay up till 5 in the morning and write through the night, we'd do that. And it was a really amazing experience to have. And I feel like it took the best out of me as an artist. I think everybody who was there wanted to be there and was really excited and just, you know, wanted to get to know me and get to know what it was that I wanted. There was nothing forced about it. It was genuine. It was organic. It was real. And I think, you know, music isn't meant to be forced. If you don't feel inspired, it's not ever going to work. If you go into the studio, if you don't feel like you can, you know, do your job, it's just like, what's the point? I sometimes feel. But that week for me was incredible. And I got, like Spinal album done.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's quite a short period of time to
that
walk away.
And I know you didn't write all the songs in that one week, but that's still
a
short period of time to get the structure of it fleshed out.
It was amazing. Like the majority of that record was done in that week, and it's incredible.
Yeah. And you mentioned that the production is a little bit more scaled back. It's more emphasis on the vocals for Always In Between. Are there any moments that you saw during that week where you were seeing that happen in real time, that the production being scaled back, like the focus on the vocals and kind of like that vibe, any moments that stick out that kind of gave the album the essence of what it is right now?
I think, you know, when we were writing, I think songs like Hate Love, for example, when I was writing that, when I was writing Million Reasons, like those kind of songs, 1, 2, 3, I think they all allowed, you know, a lot of vocal, and they were moments in which I guess made me think, you know, it's not necessarily about having, it's about creating space for what's being said rather than trying to overdo the music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those songs say something, they have messages. And I think it's important to enjoy as much of that before, you know, the production. So it was like in that week, it was mainly about getting the songs down. It wasn't about overproducing. And because of that, I guess when I came out of it and listened back to those demos, I realized that actually I didn't need to overly produce any of it. It actually kind of, it felt good in that environment, and it did feel good even once I'd left the house. So we kind of kept to like as true to the demos as possible, just because the feeling felt so, you know, so emotional and so right.
And you're surrounded by people too that you said you were familiar with. But in a lot of songwriting sessions, you walk into a room and you're working with a lot of times strangers, right? Like people that you don't know. In those situations, how do you get yourself to open up and kind of break down those barriers emotionally? If I had to do that with someone in such a short period of time, I feel like I would be so closed off. I'd be like, dude, like stop probing me for like all these emotional ins and stuff.
You know, like when you choose to do music and you choose to bear your soul and you choose to do this as a job, I guess it's part of it. I'm not very good at it when it comes to like entering a room with a load of strangers. It's just, I'm a very personal person, and I do, you know, I'm a very honest writer. And, you know, everything is very real and true to who I am and what I've experienced. So I do struggle when it comes to working with new people. But I guess, you know, when you do work with those people, you just have to like take a moment to get to know each other. And if I don't feel comfortable, I'm never going to let anything go that I don't feel right about. Mm-hmm. And that's just me being me. I can't help that. And that's definitely happened a lot of times, you know, where I've just kind of skirted around the edges. But, you know, we can't always, you know, you can't always connect with everybody. That's just like life, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess it is a weird thing, but sometimes it works really well. And sometimes, you know, connect with people on a mad scale. Like when I wrote the first session, so I'll Be There, I wrote with a girl called Camille. I'd never met her before, but we didn't write I'll Be There on the first session. Like I met her a year before we wrote I'll Be There. And I remember going into the studio with her, and I was with Jinjin as well, who's like my best mate, yeah, who I write everything with. But I met her, I never met her before. And we just had an insane connection. You know, we've gotten so well and it didn't take long at all. We wrote like 3 songs in 2 days.
Damn.
You know, and like, that's so cool. I think maybe 4 songs actually in 2 days, because like we just were so inspired, and because we got on so well and we really connected. So sometimes it just works and sometimes it doesn't. Like Ed Sheeran as well. I'd never worked with him before. I'd known him, but I'd never worked with him. And I got in with him and Steve Mack, who I had worked with before. And, you know, we had like a really deep chat. We spoke for ages, kind of had a little therapy session. And
for Thursday.
For Thursday, yeah. And, you know, he really made me feel comfortable and we got on really well. We both related, and just, I guess, we connected. So it worked. And I felt like I could break down those barriers and say what I wanted to say. But, you know, then sometimes you do get in the studio with certain people and it doesn't work as well. But that's just,
yeah, or it takes more time, I guess, exactly, depending on the person. And
yeah.
What they're willing to, because the other person has to give you some stuff too. Like, it can't just be a one-way thing where you're just like pouring your life out to someone and they're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, like, there's definitely been times where I've had to call up like my A&R and be like, you need to make an excuse and get me out of it. It's been like, that's happened. I'm not even going to lie, it's quite a joke. But it happens because it's like, you don't want to be rude to someone, but you also just don't want to sit in a room and force something that ain't right.
Exactly. So as you're working with more and more people, you're putting out more and more music, obviously you become very recognizable. And you've also been vocal on not having a huge social media presence and having that healthy separation between, I guess, kind of the facade of the positive aspect of social media, what people see is always going to be the best part of someone's life, and then what's actually going on in real life. And you've always chosen to do that through the music. How do you navigate the line of using social media as a tool to reach people, but then also not getting obsessed with it? Because I'm going through that right now. Like, I'm learning how to use social media as a tool to promote interviews and things like that. And I see it as a great way to reach people. But at the same time, I don't want to become obsessed with it and like post something and say like, oh, this, you know, this didn't do as well, or like not as much people like this, or like this guy DM'd me to go fuck myself, or like something like that. But like, and you're dealing with that on such a huge scale.
I feel like social media is an amazing thing. I think, you know, it's a great way to speak to your fans, to talk to your fans, to show your work and to promote yourself and to, you know, get people to understand you creatively. And, you know, and also, you know, it is amazing being able to allow people into your life a little bit. You know, fans always want to know what's going on. They always want to see a little bit into your personal life because they're so intrigued by who you are as an artist and they're so obsessed, I guess, by the music. Like, you know, there's so many times where I listen to music and I would love to know what this person does every day and what they're, you know. I think that's just a part of like, of being a fan, which is, I think, is amazing. And I think we all have that to us. Like, we all admire someone, you know, somewhere else that we don't have access to. And I just think for me and for my insanity, I think it's important to give what it is that I feel comfortable giving and then save what I want to save for myself. And I don't really find it that difficult, just because I'm not a really big posy person and I'm not somebody who likes to just take selfies and constantly be, you know, on my phone like that, just because I like to live in the real world.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do pick and choose my moments where, you know, I reach out and I want to, you know, communicate with, you know, my fans and with people. I just think it's one of those things I try not to think too much about. Mm-hmm. You know? I have like an amazing team who kind of, you know, guide me as well, you know, when it's important to do certain things, which I think is great. Because sometimes I'm not aware of it and what it can do, you know, for me and for everyone around. Social media is an amazing thing. But, you know, it's also one of those things that does scare me a bit in the sense that, you know, it can make you feel a bit shit about yourself because,
of course,
the way that it kind of shows everything is such a
constant
perfect
comparison
way.
And
you always compare
yourself.
No
one posts the shitty things.
No one posts the shitty things. You know, you only see what's beautiful in someone's life. And I think, you know, that's not reality. And I think people, kids especially growing up and, you know, people who struggle, who feel insecure, you know, in themselves and they see these people with these amazing everythings, you know, it's not reality. I don't wake up every day with big grin on my face and looking perfect. I wake up with knots in my hair and puffy eyes and spots on my face, and that's reality, you know, and we all do. And I think that's the part of, you know, of social media that I do struggle with a little bit. But, you know, I think it's getting better and people are talking about it a bit more. And I think, you know, Thursday, the song that I've just released now is like a really important song for that, you know. It states that, you know, you need to feel comfortable in your own skin and you are enough. And before that, you know, social media kind of existed, like people didn't think so much about, you know, those things. And I think it's so important to wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and accept yourself for who you are. And I think, you know, me being in this industry has, you know, I have developed loads of insecurities over time and felt a lot of pressure and felt a lot of vulnerability just because I haven't felt good enough or I haven't felt like I look, you know, the way a pop star should look. But who says what's right and what's wrong? And at the end of the day, I've learned to like appreciate myself for who I am, look in the mirror and accept that, you know, I'm not perfect and nobody's perfect, you know, but that's enough. And we all want to feel beautiful and we all want to feel, you know, perfect, I guess. Yeah, I've said that word about a million times. We all want to feel that.
It's true,
like,
though. There's an ironic aspect to it, too, because you and so many other artists say so many things to the music and you're bearing the deepest depths of your soul and giving people all this information about you. But then people turn around and they're like, no, I want to see like a picture of you at Starbucks. Like, I'm not like as interested in, like sometimes they're like so obsessed with like the superficial things. Yeah. And if you just listen to the music or took signals from other things, you would realize that like social media is just like a tiny, tiny slice of what an artist is about.
It is a tiny slice, but I do think it's a slice that's very important, you know, mm-hmm. because it's weird because, you know, I sometimes think about the people who I look up to and the people who have inspired me over the years. And I think of Amy Winehouse and I think of Whitney and I think of Prince and I think of Michael Jackson and I think of those artists and I'm like, but really, would Michael Jackson be on Instagram? I really don't think he would.
No,
do you know what I mean? I just don't.
My brother just showed me a video of Michael Jackson. His whole crew rented out a shopping mall, or was it a grocery store? It was a grocery store. And he wanted the feeling of shopping without people coming up to him in public. Like, his friends literally bought out a grocery store so he could shop. And he was just like literally twirling carts through public, like, just dancing with boxes of oatmeal, like, holy shit, like, I can't believe no one's coming up to me. They hired his friends to be attendants and check out people. And, like, he had no idea. So he was walking past people. He's like, wait, you're my best friend. Like,
that's really
funny.
But
it was, like, this whole experience.
I think that's what's so cool. Do you know, like, I think that's sometimes what brings me back to reality when I think about things like that. And, again, like, bringing it back to Beyonce, I think she does it so well. I think social media is a platform for her that works in such a great way. And I think, you know, she still has a lot of privacy and she hides, you know, she keeps what she needs to keep for herself and she gives what she gives. And I think it's a great balance. And I think as long as you kind of don't exploit yourself and don't feel the need to do things on social media and you do it because you want to, then I think that's kind of a great way to look at it.
So someone who's probably on social media a little bit too much is me.
No, I'm joking, no, guys.
Me and Kanye West. I was going to say Kanye West.
He's
but
left now.
On social media? Is he not on Twitter?
But his Twitter's still constantly going.
Yeah, his Twitter's still going. And I know that because I'm on social media too much. But I saw that you had said that Kanye is an artist that you look up to creatively and I remember from a few years ago when he brought up the whole grime scene at the Brit Awards. And no matter what you think of Kanye, he doesn't give a fuck like what anyone else thinks. Like I admire that about him and his experimentalism, if that's a word, experimentality, and the way he treats every album as like a separate experiment. So I wanted to know, like, yeah, what you thought of Kanye as an artist and like the
Kanye
whole experimenting.
For me is, I love Kanye and I know that he's quirky. I know he's different. I know he sometimes says things that he probably shouldn't and acts out.
Like we all do.
There you go. Because but that's just who,
he just does it to 10 million people.
He just does it because, yeah, exactly. And you know what? It is what it is. I just think he is so talented. He's like a scientist and I'm so drawn to him as an artist because he's just, everything that he does, every project that he puts out has got something and a reason behind it and something that he's wanted to do for a particular thing. And I just think that, you know, when he brought out those records, they were so soulful and so, you know, they said something, you know, and you could really relate. And he wasn't just kind of an artist for artist's sake. And I think that's what's so special about him. And I think he does say things that really do like inspire people and are real. Like, what he says about likes and about followers is just true. It's like, what does 1 million followers mean? Like at the end of the day, it's like these people fight, trying to get more and more followers and more likes and more this. It's like, what are you trying to earn? You know, what is that going to justify in your life? You know, you got 10,000 likes over 10 likes, you know, those kind of things. It is. Like, there is no wonder that it, like, makes people, you know, feel, like, a certain way. It's a weird world. But anyway, he is an incredible artist. And, you know, like, his latest record, I think, you know, I'm so glad that he kind of went back to his roots a little bit, to what I loved. I think he's just cool. And I dream, it'll be like a dream to work with him. I can imagine the way he works is so intricate and just... yeah, crazy.
Thank you for listening to this episode with Jess Glynn on Auxoro. If you haven't already, please go check out her latest album, Always In Between. It's full of bops, heartbreak, dance vibes, the full spectrum of emotions. Too many of Jess's songs are already in heavy rotation on my playlist, so go get you some. While you're listening to Jess, please take a few moments to subscribe, comment, and rate our podcast. It really does help people find out about us, and we appear in more search results through iTunes algorithm that I don't understand at all. So help us out with 5 stars, tell a friend, and go listen to some Jess. Until next time.
When all the tears are rolling down your face, and it feels like yours was the only heart to break. When you come back home and all the lights are out, and you're getting used to no one else being around. Oh, I'll be there. When you need a little love, I got a little love to share. Yeah, I'm gonna come through. You'll never be alone, I'll be there for you. I'll be there, yeah, yeah, I'll be there for you. To blame.